Issues of Life with marriage, family, and child counselor John Jolla. Stay with us for the next hour as we explore what's behind the situations and relationships that make up the issues of your life. Now, here's John.
Hello, everyone. This is John Jolliffe, and welcome to the next issue of life. You know, we all think that our lives are so unique, don't we? I mean, you know, that we're all different from the masses of people. You know, thank God I'm not made like one of those. But how uninformed we really are. The benefit and the gift of sociology is that sociology declares our similarities. Because, you see, the study of sociology is made possible only because human behavior is patterned and therefore predictable. You know, we all get dressed up pretty much the same way, don't we? Each day, most of us have socks in the drawer that have no partners. And when riding an elevator, don't most of us face forward? That's right. You know, we like to think that we are so different, and there are situations in which we are unique, wonderfully made. But I think generally overall, the reason that programs like The Issues of Life, talk shows across America, are successful is that we all can identify. We can sit back and we can observe those people who are willing to risk anonymity. They're willing to risk on our behalf. We can benefit from that because we can identify. Oh, I guess you can't if you think you're so unique that you're not like one of us. The Issues of Life program, I think the greatest contribution that The Issues of Life makes is to the daily uncovering of the patterns. That's right, the patterns and the regularities from among the many incidents and observations of life. Come on, we're pretty much all going through this together. We're all alone in this together, don't you think? Why don't you call me toll-free today and let's get talking about some of the issues in your life and let's see how similar these things really, really are. My name is John Jolliffe. I'll be back in just a commercial minute or two with the first issue of life. Get on the phones. Let's talk. Toll free. 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. And let's speak to Amber. Amber, welcome to The Issues.
Hi. I guess my problem is when I was younger, I had a dad and my parents were divorced. Well, they got divorced when I was really young. And
how old are you now, Amber?
How old am I now?
Yes.
15.
You're 15, all right.
Yeah. Well, my parents got divorced when I was like 3.
Okay.
But my dad was still around. I saw him every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And I put my full trust in him. I mean, he was like, I always looked up to him and I always put my full trust in him. Mm-hmm. And every single time I would put my trust in him, he would let me down. Never once can I remember he didn't let me down. Mm-hmm. And just every single time. And I didn't really understand this till very recently, but every time I'm in a relationship, whether it's with my friends or whether it's a boyfriend or, you know, anybody, even my family, I cannot put my full trust in them because I have this feeling that I know I'm going to be let down and I know how much it hurts.
Well, you know, I know that's connected to your father, and I think any father man listening is probably, I don't know, feeling apologetic for your father, but certainly saying, please don't judge all of us in the same way. But you understand that as a child, we don't really know much about how the world works and how much trust and how much of ourselves we should really give a relationship. We don't know. So we either don't give enough or we give way too much. And that by these injuries and by these wounds and by these hurt things, disappointments all, what we do is we learn how much to give. Now, I think it would be improper, and I think you probably would agree, it would be improper for you to not trust or give to a relationship in the future because of the painful experience of your past. But I think it would also be a mistake to look at a relationship as being one in which you could close both your eyes and just trust. The best of relationships, Amber, the best of relationships you should keep one eye on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no one that you should ever trust so much that you wouldn't have to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? But when we're children, we oftentimes think, I shouldn't be holding my mother and father accountable. I shouldn't be watching one eye. I should be able to turn my back. And that's sometimes where we get injured.
Yeah, and in a way, I guess I realized that because I decided, you know, in the next relationship, I'm not going to give my all trust, but, you know, I'm going to trust enough, you know?
And that's so right. Trust enough to be vulnerable. Trust enough to be hurt. Mm-hmm. But don't trust enough to be devastated.
And that's what I tried to do. You know, just put a little bit of trust, but not enough so that if I did get hurt.
That's right.
Yeah, and this relationship turned out, you know, this person was like, well, I can trust this person more now because this and this. And then finally, in the end, I was giving him just as much trust.
As you gave your father.
In the end, I was so hurt, you know?
Okay, it's one thing to be hurt, and it's painful to love and to care. It's still the best game in town, loving and caring. But one of the things we have to learn from our childhoods is that we should not be blind anymore. The good people do bad things, and people we think that would be beyond question oftentimes surprise us with what happens. But let's take a look at something on the other side of the commercial in terms of how you got hurt, all right?
Okay.
My name is John Jolliffe, and we'll be back in just a minute with Amber and this particular issue of life on the next issue of life.
There's no question about it. Life can be a painful experience. That's why some people work overtime to avoid getting hurt. Naturally, there's nothing wrong with avoiding pain, unless you wind up avoiding life in the process. If you or someone you know keeps their feelings in a deep freeze, you ought to get a copy of John Jolliffe's special cassette, Emotional Anesthetics. In this assortment of conversations from the Issues of Life broadcast, John deals with callers who've traded negative feelings for no feelings at all. He explores ways that lonely, isolated people can let down their guard without getting trampled in the process. Emotional Anesthetics, just $7.95 when you write to The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call us at 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard handy. Either way, be sure to mention that title, Emotional Anesthetics. The address again, The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call 1-800-447-7837.
John Jolliffe, we have kind of a unique situation. We have two other 15-year-olds, Erica and Susan, who their youth pastor, and they all seem to know each other, Amber, Susan, and Erica, they all seem to know each other, and the youth pastor told them to call the Issues of Life, and let's talk about these particular issues. Okay, so let's see if we can't conference them. This will be a first. We're going to try to put three people on at the same time. Amber, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on one second, okay?
Okay.
All right. If I lose anybody, call back. Okay, who's this? This is
Erica.
Hi, Erica.
Hi.
Amber, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if we can join you with Susan.
Okay.
Uh-oh, we lost somebody. Hold on. We lost somebody else. This is interesting. Let's see. Uh-oh. Well, it looks like...
I'm here.
You're there?
Amber's here.
Amber?
Erica's here.
Erica's there. We didn't get Susan. Have Susan call back. Susan, if you're listening, please call me back. Okay. Erica, tell me a little bit about your situation.
Well, it's just that I feel these voices inside of me, like, telling me that I'm going to die soon, and they just keep telling me that I'm going to die, and... whenever I have a chance to think, it's just these voices telling me, that's all, like, I hear, these voices telling me that I'm going to die. And, like, I've had dreams about dying, and it scares me so much. I mean, I know I'm going to go to heaven and stuff, but it's like, I don't want to die right now, and it's really scary, and I don't like these voices. Like, it scares me.
I tell you what. Do you, Amber, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Erica, now you and Amber, and I think Susan will say the same. You were in the same class in Sunday school. Is that what it is?
It's we're doing a special program in church.
Uh huh. And what's that program on?
It's called Walking on Water. It's all summer, and we learn all different things and do all different stuff.
And how did it come, Erica? How did it come about that your youth pastor encouraged you to call?
We were talking about goals, and one of my goals was to get over this because I don't like thinking about it, and he told me to call because that's one of my steps or something.
Okay, excellent. Well, you know, we were talking to Amber earlier about keeping one eye on a relationship. Do you remember that, Erica?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How well do you do relationships, by the way?
Okay,
you're 15, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a learning phase.
Yeah.
Let me tell you both something. As you continue to grow and mature, what you're going to find is that as you gain success in a particular area, it gives you confidence to draw from, borrow from those areas of success, and to apply them in another area. Do you understand that concept? For instance, you might be very good at one thing at school, and because you're good at that, you might find that you have the confidence to study hard to be better at something else. Okay, so Erica, let's take a moment off from your fears of dying, okay?
Okay.
And let's go over and help Amber with her issue of trusting in terms of how much she can trust, okay?
Okay.
Did you hear her question earlier? When you were on hold?
Amber?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Give her some advice, would you? In terms of how much to give and how much to trust a relationship and this whole question of being hurt. Can you give her some advice? Either from your own experience or from what seems reasonable?
Well, I think if you go into a relationship, you should get to know the person, like, good before you can put, like, your trust into them, because if you just go into a relationship putting, like, your full trust in them, you're going to get hurt, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
So give as much as you can, but reserve enough that if when you're hurt, you can recover.
Yeah.
Don't give your whole self to a relationship, because then, you know, when the relationship, if it ends, then there's a sense in which you feel like your life is over.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that advice, Amber?
I think... Well, that's very good advice, but...
Okay, let's stop right there, okay, before we get to the butt. What do you think about that, Erica?
What?
You give pretty good advice.
Okay.
Do you think so?
I don't...
Have you ever given yourself credit for giving good advice?
Do I give myself credit?
Yeah, do you ever give yourself credit for giving good advice?
I don't know.
Well, do you offer good advice very often?
I don't know. I try to give people advice. I don't know if it helps them or not.
Has anybody ever complimented you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Amber, I'm going to get back to you, so don't leave me, okay?
Okay.
All right. I just want to show you something. Erica, if you can give good advice to other people, and you have to be committed to knowing whether you do or don't, and listen to what people say as well. If they say, Erica, you know, you're really very helpful. I really appreciate your support. You have some good insights. If you hear that kind of thing, take it personally. Okay?
Okay.
Now, if you can give good advice to other people, guess what?
I could take it.
That's right. And you can also give it to who?
Huh?
And you can also give it to who?
I don't know.
Give it to yourself.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And you can take it and you can give it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Give yourself some good advice. Let me hear you. Give yourself some good advice about this fear of death.
Give myself advice?
Yeah, it's a novel idea, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, you've just proven you've got a good sense about you. I mean, I heard Amber say it.
Uh-huh.
So give yourself some good advice about this fear of death.
Okay. about it or something. I don't know.
And if you were going to pray about it, what would you pray about?
Just that these voices would leave me so I don't have to, like, think about it or anything.
Yes, but you know, I think the voices ought to stay there for a little while.
Why?
We need those voices, don't we, for a little while.
I guess.
And what do we need to do with those voices? They're really not voices, they're more thoughts, aren't they?
I guess.
Mm-hmm. And why do we need to listen to these thoughts?
To learn.
To learn. So we need to question them, right?
Okay.
Okay. Because maybe they'll get us somewhere.
Okay.
And where do you think they'll take us? I mean, what's there to learn about your fear of dying?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
What's there to learn?
What's there to learn about your fear of dying?
I don't know.
No, come on. You give better advice than that. Amber said so, right, Amber?
Right.
Okay. Right on. Come on, Erica. What's there to learn about your fear of death?
Like that I'm going to heaven or something? I don't know.
But that doesn't help us understand your fear.
Okay.
See, we have to sink into and feel and listen enough to that feeling to become more familiar with it.
Uh-huh.
It's not something to run away from or deny. It's something to learn from.
Okay.
Okay. Amber, let me ask your help here, okay?
Okay.
What do you think there's to learn about her fear of dying?
Maybe that shouldn't be a fear.
Okay.
Maybe, well, it's kind of hard for me to relate to because I'm looking forward to dying. I want to die.
You want to die?
Oh.
This is good news?
I've had recent, like, someone close to me recently die.
Okay.
And I, like, can't wait to get to heaven to be with this person. And it's hard for me to relate, but maybe it shouldn't be a fear. Maybe it, you know, maybe she should look forward, not really look forward to dying, but make it so she's not afraid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's what I would do. Or,
and what about all the work, though, you were supposed to do, Amber?
Huh?
What about all the work that you were given to do? God gave you life for a purpose. And it wasn't to get over it so that you could get, you know, into heaven with all your friends.
Mm-hmm.
But God gave you a life to do something with it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but how will I know when I've served that purpose?
And I think you know, missing people and mourning their loss and thinking you'd rather be with them than be here all alone is certainly understandable. But at some point, the mourning will end, and we'll get on and find a purpose for our lives, won't we?
Mm-hmm.
Erica, one of the things I was thinking of is that people who are afraid of dying have something to live for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had nothing to live for, you wouldn't be afraid of dying, would you?
Mm-mm.
So, what do you have to live for? What is so exciting or interesting in your life that you're afraid of losing it? What is something that you hope will happen for you that you're afraid of leaving early? Even if you're going to heaven, even if you're going to be with Jesus, the point is, there's something here that's very important to you or you hope will happen, and that's why you're afraid. So what is there to be excited about, or what is it you hope?
Well, I've always wanted to, like, get married and, like, have lots of kids.
Uh-huh.
That's what I've always wanted.
And why is that so important to you?
Because I think family is really important, so you're there for each other.
And did you have the experience in your childhood of having that family, that same family that you want to create?
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to kind of replicate or create a similar kind of family that you came from? And the fear is that you won't have that chance?
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I guess, yeah.
Well, have you ever wanted something so badly, only to find out that you didn't get it?
I don't think so.
Okay. Sometimes it happens that way. You want something so badly, and you just think that maybe it won't happen for you, and so you fear losing that opportunity, that chance. I want to talk to you off the air. And then we're going to come back, and Amber, we're going to answer some of your questions, too, about that whole issue of trust, okay?
Okay.
All right, stay with me on the next Issues of Life.
Few responsibilities in life are as important or life-changing as the task of parenthood. Yet people seem to become parents with less training and experience than it takes to get a driver's license. Fortunately, no matter how many miles you have under your belt, it's never too late to start learning the principles of practical parenting. And John Jolliffe explores many of them in his popular cassette called Parenting Issues and Insights. It's a collection of calls from the Issues of Life broadcast, covering a whole range of child-raising concerns, including how to relate to your children when they're no longer children. Parenting Issues and Insights. Just ask for it by name when you contact the Issues of Life Foundation, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Remember to send along $7.95 for each copy you request. Or if you prefer to use your credit card, call 1-800-4-ISSUES. Again, that's the Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or for Visa or MasterCard users, 1-800-447-7837.
John Jolliffe, I was talking to Erica. We got, disconnected with Erica, but I was telling Erica off the line that we have to be very concerned, we have to be careful that when we fear something, that it doesn't necessarily mean that we're having some kind of prophecy, some kind of prediction that something awful is going to happen. Many times a fear has to do with a hope, has to do with an excitement, that we're so excited about something that we now know we want, something we're so hopeful will happen, that we have fear that it won't take place, that something will come and interrupt that. And of course, the question to ask yourself, Erica, is what do you know about yourself, or what experience have you had that may in some way interfere with your being able to have this very thing? You know, do you have experience that says that once you wanted something, there was always someone there to make it difficult, someone to interfere? Is that where this fear comes from? It's going to happen again? Or is it just something that you're so excited about that you're afraid that you won't get it and receive it? Also, Erica and the rest of us, let's be flexible enough in terms of our dreams to make them possible by making them flexible. Let's not have such a narrow expectation that unless it happens just the way we always imagined it, then our dreams really didn't come true. And with Amber, as I was saying about love, you want to give yourself to relationships, and they take commitment and they take sacrifice, and you want to give yourself to the point of vulnerability where, yes, you will be hurt, and it will be a loss, and they will have to mourn. But don't ever give your all in the sense that if it happens that you lose people through death or you lose them for other reasons, that you have lost yourself. That's giving far too much. And people who give that much to a relationship are basically trying to find themselves in the relationship. The best relationships are where we know ourselves well enough to be able to give ourselves to a relationship. We don't give ourselves to find ourselves. We give ourselves because we know ourselves as best as you can. Okay, let's take the last young lady. There you are, Susan.
Yeah.
Thank you for being patient. I'm sorry we lost you.
Oh, that's all right.
And you're 15 as well.
Yeah.
And you're part of that same class.
Yeah.
Tell me what your issue is. Your question.
Well, I kind of would like to know how I can overcome my depression, because I kind of have a problem with that. Sometimes I just feel like I just want to go in my room, lock myself in my room, and cry the whole day.
Okay. That's kind of the feeling you have?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might have heard me say at one time or another that depression is not a feeling. Many people think depression is a feeling.
Uh-huh.
Depression is not a feeling. Depression is what you do to feelings. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So take your two palms and push them together right now, okay?
Okay.
And keep pushing them hard. Hard.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
What's happening?
Oh, no.
Stop. Okay. How did it feel? Your arms get tired?
Yeah.
That's what we do with certain feelings. We press them down like that. That's what depression is. You're pushing something down. The question is, what feeling are you doing that to? See, when you get in those funks, right?
Uh-huh.
You get in the room, you shut the door, and you just want to have a cry. The question is, what feeling are you having a hard time dealing with that you might be pushing down?
I don't know.
Well, you may not know right now.
Yeah.
But that would be the question you'd want to ask yourself when you get in those periods of time.
Uh-huh.
There's a feeling that you're having a hard time dealing with. It may be sadness.
Yeah.
You may feel sad. Is that a feeling you feel typically?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is jealousy a feeling?
Jealousy, yes.
Okay.
Jealousy. And jealousy typically means that you feel that you're easily replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And that would say something about the way you esteem yourself, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That you have so little going for you that somebody else could quickly replace you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And as you grow and as you come to understand yourself in terms of what you bring to a relationship and what you bring to life, you'll start feeling better and better about yourself. And the more you accomplish with your life, and the more risks you take, and the more success you have, then the more confidence you have in yourself, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you think God cares about your self-esteem, the way you esteem yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things he said is, learn to love other people and your neighbor. And your neighbor is anybody who's in your path. It's not just the guy geographically next door. Learn to love other people with the same kind of love that you've learned to love yourself with. And as you respect yourself and you would not do damage to yourself, remember to love other people that way too. And that way you keep all the law and the prophets. Love God with all your heart. Love other people the same. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it all starts with kind of understanding yourself better.
Yeah.
And yes, even when we feel good about ourselves and we have good, healthy self-esteem, we do also feel sad.
Yeah.
We have these off days. Sometimes it has to do with forgetting certain things that are true.
Yeah.
And when you mature, and as you continue maturing, on that healthiest, most mature day of your life, you may still feel sad. But your recovery from that will be so much quicker.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So as you're going through the adolescent period where there are a number of challenges and you're learning a lot about yourself, there will be these difficult days.
Yeah.
But don't forget the things that are true about you, that make you wonderful and make you unique.
Uh-huh.
And build on those things. And I think your recovery from those days will be faster.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay.
I enjoyed talking to you.
I enjoyed too.
Will you call me again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Depression is what you do to feelings, friends. That's what you do to feelings. I got this little card from my daughter, who's 17. She says, "Happy belated Father's Day." It was the day after Father's Day. Sorry about that. I'm glad you're so understanding. That's why I love you so much, and I know you'll understand when I have an after-school party tomorrow. It's all one sentence. I'm sorry, and I love you, and I know how wonderful you are, and therefore you'll let me have an after-school party. All right, anyway, the challenges. Let's talk to Matthew. Matthew's been patient, waiting. Hi, Matthew.
Hi. How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Wasn't it wonderful talking to those young people?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that three of them showed up at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. They travel in packs, they're like gangs, you know? Okay, how can I help you, Matthew?
Well, my question was about, you were talking about the engagements.
Yes.
And getting to know your partner as well as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something I've done in the past, because I've been engaged 3 times before.
Uh-huh.
But I was not with the Lord in those days. So mm-hmm. My question was, in getting to know your partner as well as possible, I'm having a problem with, obviously, the intimacy part of it.
Okay.
And how I should deal with that is, I guess, my question.
Now, intimacy, what do you mean by that?
Well, how intimate should you get prior to marriage, in other words, and how
you
deal with that.
You're talking about sex?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, the Bible talks about, and I agree. It's not for me to agree, but the point is, I agree that we have to be very careful not to sexualize a relationship, because when you're getting to know someone,
right,
it's very important that you be as objective as you can. And what typically happens when you sexualize a relationship, get into heavy petting, get into other kinds of fornication,
right,
and things like that, is that then when you've crossed that boundary and you've opened that door, now that begins to take precedence, and that becomes the subject of discovery and the subject of the relationship is, how far are we going to go, and when are we going to do it again, and
right,
and where and when and how often, and all of those very physical kinds of things. And then the relationship, in terms of discovery, in terms of personality and temperament and behavior and the way people handle various challenges in their life, is lost because sex is so powerful.
Right.
Such a distraction.
Well, that was my concern with trying to get to know your partner so well, because that plays an important part. Obviously, once you get married, and
yes, but you know, it's interesting that it's interesting.
The relationship.
Yes, but people oftentimes have this false idea that unless you are sexually active before marriage, you never know if you're really going to be compatible.
Right, that's my problem.
And well, that you're, yeah, okay. But the point is that you can find out just about anything you want to know about sexual compatibility, that whole emotional, intimate compatibility. You can pretty much prove everything about that without having to have sex. You want to know that somebody is free with themselves and comfortable with themselves? You can tell that without sex. You want to know about how they feel about intimacy and love and enticement and toying with and playing with your feelings and emotions in a productive or arousing way? You can tell that without having intercourse. You know, there's any number of things. The plumbing all works. I mean, you can't get lost. I mean,
yeah,
you don't need a manual. I mean, but the other component that is oftentimes overlooked, and for which couples come to me and to other counselors and therapists and pastors, is the emotional component of the sexual relationship.
Right.
The emotional component is oftentimes missed out on. There's not enough arousal in the relationship, or respect, or trust, or confidence, or understanding, compassion. You can work on all of those things that cause a sexual relationship to be very, very romantic.
Right.
And you can practice all of that other kind of acknowledging compassion stuff without sexualizing. And that's the most important part of the sexual relationship. It's all the non-sexual physical stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because
and people think that if you can do intercourse, then you, and that's exciting and arousing, then you can get all the other stuff right.
It's kind of backwards.
You're absolutely right. It's backwards.
But so, unfortunately, you know, you don't think about things like that when you're first.
That's right, and that's why we're having this conversation,
right,
and hopefully that'll increase your awareness so that you and your prospective lover can sit down and talk about these things. Because if you'll talk things out and get an understanding and an agreement, you don't have to act them out and then later have conflict and guilt.
Right.
Now, let me tell you one of the other downsides to fornication is that oftentimes people will then commit to the relationship, because if they don't commit to it after having intercourse, they will feel like they're being cheap,
right,
and that their reputation is going to be smeared. And so therefore, they're committed to the relationship, not because of what they see is what they like, but because they just are so concerned about their relationship.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it binds them, in other words.
It binds them in the most unfortunate ways.
Right.
So have an abundance of caution. There has to be enough sparkle and sap in the relationship, you know, and you can find that, but keep an abundance of caution so that you don't get into sexualizing the relationship and then go blind.
Right.
Because sex before marriage makes you blind. Okay?
Okay.
All right, Matthew, I enjoyed talking to you. I guess that's goodbye. Let's talk to Trudy. Hello, Trudy.
Hi.
Welcome to The Issues.
Well, I have missed your program for a while. We got distracted doing other things, and I just, the other day, I found you again, and I went, oh my gosh, this is the person I need to talk to.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's great. Will you stay on the line, because we're going to take a commercial break, and we can come back.
I'll be happy to wait.
We'll take you. Yeah, you only have to wait 2 minutes, not 12 months.
Oh, I will wait a half hour.
Well, I hope it's not going to be a half hour commercial. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. My name is John Jolliffe. We're going to be back with Trudy. She's got a 3.5-year-old granddaughter who's acting out and wants to know about boundaries on the next issue of Life.
Fear. It's something we all experience in life. But many of us carry fears from our early life, experience that still deeply affect us today. Listen in as John Jolliffe helps callers identify some of their past fears through the use of talk therapy. In his popular cassette entitled Escaping the Prison of Past Fears, you'll hear how you or someone you love can gain freedom from the past and enjoy the realities of today. Ask for Escaping the Prison of Past Fears, just $7.95 when you write to The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or for faster service, call 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard handy. Again, that's The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or for Visa or MasterCard requests, call 1-800-447-7837.
This is John Jolliffe, and Trudy was used to listen to us, and then she lost contact with us when we went off the air. And I was just telling Trudy that one of the ways that we stay on the air is to raise money by telling you all about the need. And we do have the need for all of you who are listening, who benefit from the Issues of Life, to support our efforts on your behalf. As I've told you before, this is my volunteer effort on behalf of the work that we do each day here in the private practice, but this hour together is complementary, at least my volunteer effort, and yet we must all make a sacrifice and participate together. So please support the Issues of Life with your donations. And there's never enough donations to pay the bills each month, and I would certainly appreciate any help that you can give us. Issues of Life, write us, Issues of Life, Post Office Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801, and that assures that we'll be back tomorrow. Now, Trudy, you said that you were channel surfing, and
yeah.
You found us again. That's a great term.
Yeah, I was, and I hadn't heard your voice for a long time, and I heard your voice, and I went, oh, how could I have missed him all this time? And I was so glad to hear you back again.
Well, thank you very much.
Keep
us on the air.
I respect for you.
You have a 3-year-old daughter.
A 3.5-year-old granddaughter, whom my husband and I, up until 2 weeks ago, were her primary daycare people.
Yes.
But because during the summertime, we business have to go out of town on Mondays and Fridays, it's been hard for my daughter, so she decided to put her in preschool so that she would know that she would be in a safe place and didn't have to try to get. But the school where she's going, they will only let her go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Or, well, I mean, she doesn't have to go Wednesday, but she has to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been trying to do that. Well, we've been having some real problems, and I don't know if that's all of it causing some of the acting out, but she's been doing a lot of things that are real distressing. We don't spank her. We do time out. So she's been doing some hitting, and I get real... because my life right now
is she hitting where the other kids in the day school?
No, hitting me and Grandpa and Mom.
Okay.
Hitting us.
All right.
And bedtime, we've always had her little ritual where Mom goes in and snugglers, and then Grandma and Grandpa.
Now, is your daughter living with you?
Yes, they live with us.
Okay, the husband and wife.
No.
Okay, so it's
Dad is around, but he doesn't. But they're not married.
They didn't get married. Okay.
So,
do they have visitation?
Say what?
Does he have visitation?
Oh, yes. He sees her a lot, and it was one of those things where they just brought out the worst in each other.
Okay.
But there's
a lot of this child does a lot of passing around. Comes to your house, sees you, goes to the nursery, goes to Dad. Then there's Mom when she's not working. So there's a lot of passing around for this child, a lot of people that she has to get to know.
Right.
At 3 years old, 3 and a half.
Yeah. Well, see, this is part of the argument that my daughter and I had. I thought it was a little too early for her to go.
Well, it's not too... I don't know that it's too early to go, although 3 and a half is young.
Yeah.
But I think it's too early to go to all those places.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. What can we do?
Well, that would take a little more time because I need to know what's available in terms of options. But I'm just saying to you that I think that what may be distressing to her is all the personality types that she is not capable of integrating and relating and responding to, and each personality demands and expects certain different things. And I think it may be just a level of frustration having at least 4, 5, or 6 different caretakers.
Well, but see, that's the thing, because Bampa and Bama are, we're the one who she spends most of her time with.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Which one are you, Trudy?
I'm Bama.
You're Bama, okay.
I'm Bama, yeah. Uh-huh. And we are the ones that she spends, I would say she spends at least 80% of her time with us.
Uh-huh.
Because Mom works.
Okay.
And Dad sees her when he can. You know, it's not a it's not a every other weekend kind of thing, but he's...
But then she also has the daycare.
Well, but that's just now. That's real new.
Okay, and was she hitting you before?
A little bit, but not... I mean, it's
more so now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it is her reaction to stress.
Oh, I'm sure. And she started biting her nails again, too.
Okay.
You know, okay. But yeah, that's no... It's not... I don't think it's that big a thing, mm-hmm. but Mom's kind of stressing about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of little things. You know how they... And it's one of those things where I'm kind of going, okay, how do I adjust my boundaries to give her some room to deal with her stress, but still go, you know, this is not appropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm trying to figure out how to adjust my boundaries so that I don't end up coming off, you know, just...
Well, also, how does Mom deal?
She goes off.
Yeah, she goes off.
Yeah.
She becomes very emotional.
Yeah.
Yelling, screaming?
Yelling... Not screaming. She doesn't say hateful things, but she does. She gets loud. But
okay.
She's not, I mean, no name calling. We don't do any of the you're stupid, you're, you know, none of that. But just, here, right now, I need some time to whatever. Or what you're doing is not acceptable.
Well, the thing that I would probably look at is I would look at the relationship she has with her mom.
Uh-huh.
And I would look at, you know, kind of the emotional atmosphere within your daughter. In terms of whatever the needs are that got her to a place of being pregnant to begin with.
Well, yeah.
There's some issues going on with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You see, and you just told me that with that. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
You can't expect a 3-year-old or 3-and-a-half-year-old to be able to navigate with a mother who has so much going on in her own private life.
Oh, I agree. And this really...
So you're trying to insulate, but... There may not be enough insulation.
Yeah, and I think primarily that at this point it's, okay, I can't fix that.
What's that feeling?
Mad, glad, sad, nervous.
Yeah, mad, sad.
And mad, too.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Well, there's just so much going on, and I'm at this point. It's okay. What can I do to keep myself steady in the middle of all this craziness?
Do you hear that? You know what you're doing?
No.
you are talking out all the conflict going on in you. Mad,
yeah.
Sad, glad, happy, and nervous. You're talking it out. If you don't talk it out, guess what you do?
I internalize it.
You act it out.
Yeah.
Right? She hasn't learned to internalize it. I hope she never learns that, because you don't want to park all that conflict inside yourself, because that's when your body breaks down. So she's acting out. We don't want to... You know, it's interesting, just a digression. In the 50s and the 60s, we used to take people's tonsils out.
Yeah.
And tonsils, were when they got swollen, was basically... indicating that maybe what you were eating and digesting was poison, that your body was allergic to this.
You run, yeah.
And
my
so you know what we
take mine out because of that. I was lucky.
Yeah, and so what we basically said is, I'm not going to let you tonsils tell me what I can and cannot eat, even if it doesn't agree with me. I'm taking you out, so you can't speak up. And so what happens is that young children, they don't know how to talk out all this conflict and confusion. They can't even identify it. And so what you see in their behavior is their behavior is acting it out.
Yeah.
Then what parents and guardians do is they put a lid on that behavior. They say, young lady, don't you hit, don't you do this, don't you do that, we don't do this. Okay? And so then the child is left with, well, I've got all this conflict I can't change and do anything with, and I'm not allowed to express that, so I guess I'll just cut off my feelings, or internalize, or park it, or just keep quiet, or sit there and bang my head or something.
Well, what I try to do is say, okay, if you need to hit, go hit a pillow. If you need to hit, go, you know, you can hit on your bed, you can, just don't hit people.
Okay. What I would suggest you do, if you haven't already done that, not to say you've done it before, I'm talking about at this point.
Yeah.
I would say that the family needs to go to family counseling. And I don't know how many sessions you're going to need because I don't know all that's going on. Take your daughter, your husband, and you, since you're all living in the same atmosphere, don't take your granddaughter, and go to family counseling, get an assessment as to what's going on, and it may involve individual therapy. I don't know whether it be for you or certainly for your daughter, it sounds like, but you need to deal with the causes of the conflict rather than the symptoms. We'll talk off the air, Trudy, and welcome back.
The Issues of Life is a presentation of the Issues of Life Foundation, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801.